This is Liz Murray from NCSA Public Affairs sitting down with Arden Bement of Purdue University, who gave a keynote this morning here at the Blue Water Symposium, From Megaflop to Petaflop and Beyond.
In your opinion, what do you believe is the value of Blue Waters?
The Blue Water computer is one of the leading supercomputers in the world. It would rank among the top 5 or 10 of the fastest computers. And it allows scientists to work on much more complex problems than they might otherwise do and get solutions much faster. So the impact on science and engineering is great. It's also accessible by scientists and engineers at large throughout the United States to work at the very high petaflop range at this point. But also it has a vast store of data storage, both flash data storage and archival data storage, to help store the massive amounts of data that are generated not only in solving problems, but also doing research, laboratory research, and gathering research data. And what this means is that at each step of capacity in computer computation technology, we're able to solve more important problems, more impactful problems, gain a higher level of understanding, and do it much faster.
So you've kind of started to answer my second question a little bit, but let's look at it from the what if not side. So what would science and research look like today without Blue Waters?
It would greatly impair the advancement in mathematics and statistics. Peter Lacks, whom I talked about in my talk, recognized the importance of computation as part of the scientific method, even back in the early 1980s. And it had been recognized much earlier than that. The community using computation as a method of research has grown dramatically. If that method did not exist, there are a lot of problems that couldn't be solved. They couldn't be solved as quickly as they're being solved. And they wouldn't be as visual as, oftentimes you have to be able to visualize and you have to be able to do modeling and simulation in order to gain an understanding of some very abstract problem. And this is a real aid to the human mind to be able to comprehend what the data is showing you.
Absolutely. It helps, in my opinion, of course, share that science not only with your field, but with the world as well.
Well, and that's where University of Illinois and the NCSA Center has made a very valuable contribution in being able to do big visualization for IMAX theaters. And it's just like movies today, using kind of tools that are used in visualization can achieve effects and also convey messages that couldn't be conveyed otherwise.
So switching from what's currently there and how that's impactful to the future, that seems to be everyone's big question is what's next. So
yes.
What is your opinion of the future for big compute?
Well, first of all, it's going to involve computation. It's going to involve massive amounts of visualization and simulation. It will become more graphical. But as I mentioned, with synaptic computing, there will be more natural bridges between the human brain and the machine. This will help combine what the human being can do best and what the machine can do best and faster. So one of the big returns on that investment is that technology is going to move faster. Science is going to move faster, be shorter, shorter lead times. And because of the coupling of the economy with technology, the economy will benefit. And so there'll be advances. Some of these advances will improve quality of life through medicine, through better pharmaceuticals, through drug discovery, through better diagnostics, through better understanding of chronic health problems and the connection with genetics. It wasn't too long ago when it would take a very long period of time, a month or perhaps even longer, to unravel a genetic code. Now you can do it in a matter of hours, and before long you'll be able to do it in a matter of minutes as we build better algorithms, as we build better software, and as we have more computation speed.
Yeah, and I think the hope is that we can have more kind of on-the-spot diagnosis, you know, and more of a in practice tool as opposed to an after
And this
research.
is actually impacting our security and national defense. Our adversaries, especially among radical sects, are using these technologies very effectively. And many of the members of these terrorist groups are well trained in the use of computers. And so in terms of hacking into systems and stealing information, and also more than that, using misinformation effectively with the general public is on the increase. We have to be able to combat that. And the technology for doing that is still a viable subject. Cybersecurity is ramping up. We need more practitioners, so we need to train more students who can work in this field in order to combat it. So our homeland security, our international security is at stake in being able to stay and maintain leadership and stay ahead of the game.
My last question is, in your opinion, for looking towards the future, what's going to be the most important step for us being successful in continuing to grow in high-performance computing? So do you think it's students, or do you think it's something else?
No, it's obviously students. Young people are becoming more computer savvy. I can give an example. I went to Medellin and went into the barrio to a library, and there was a section of the library dedicated to young people with computers. And I saw a little three-year-old girl working a computer faster than I could. And she wasn't just doing children's games. She was looking at patterns. She was looking at other things that were of interest to her. And so that's just exemplary. It's not just in the advanced countries. It's in Colombia is relatively advanced, but even in the developing countries, young people are really picking up on this very, very fast. So I think there will be more natural bridges between the human being and computers in the future. It will enhance the learning process. It will enhance the ability to understand your environment. It will enhance overcoming disabilities, either mental disabilities or physical disabilities. So, and I mentioned the case of robotics, advanced robotics. A paraplegic now doesn't necessarily have to talk to a computer. They can think, and those thought waves will go to the robot, and they'll understand what they have to do in order to fetch something to bring to the paraplegic. That's pretty advanced stuff. And that was demonstrated, I think, in 2008. So it's been around for a while.
So I don't know if you were here last night. There was this question of bringing computer science to K through 12 so that we're helping the young people then usher a new age of high-performance computing.
I'd be a little cautious about that. I think children at that age benefit from discovery. It's better to give them the opportunity to play and to learn through play and to learn through their own discovery. Oftentimes we take children who are very creative and we drill the creativity out of them, and that's a hazard. That happens in some societies in the world today, and that doesn't necessarily lead to a society that's innovative, that is more advanced, and is agile, an agile society that can move from place to place, can move from one job to another job or one community to another community and adapt very, very quickly. And that adaptivity is learned in children at a very early age, because they have to adapt to an environment they don't understand, and they do it very quickly, much quicker than we do.
Well, that was all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. You had some great insights.
Thank you for allowing me to.